Good evening. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17, 1981. And I'm grateful to be here. And I do want to acknowledge I have some, of course, some good friends in the audience and people I've seen before. John Glenn, my sponsor, is here somewhere hiding out. Oh, there he is. Yeah. He's got like, what do you got, 53 years? 54. And he's a slipper. It's true, he's a slipper. He was sober for a year and then he slipped. Well, you can't blame him. It was a serious problem. He slipped because it was a lot of pressure. I think some guy over in Germany said, you're not going to drink, you don't like me, or something like that. And he says, okay, I'll have one after a year. So it was a lot of pressure put on him, you know. And so he slipped. And I think Dane's here, Dane C. I talk about Dane C. Dane Pirelli's in the back of the room, hiding out. He's got 45 years. He came down from New Jersey. I talk about Dane sometimes. I might have even told the story in here. Was this the place where I told the story about the guy who invited me to lunch? And I kept on going to lunch. And oh, that's a great story. It has nothing to do with the 8th, but I may tell it anyway. I don't know. We'll see when we have some time. I got some other things. How many people were at the 6 o'clock meeting that back on track? I'm going to do a little of that stuff because I like the way the... I like the way they committed suicide after the meeting. You know, how many people have been to some of these steps who are like coming back? You know, how many people, this is the first time they've been to any of my step meetings? Really? Well, okay. Well, I'm grateful for the people that actually, I'm always surprised that people actually come back. I do my best not to hold back and thin the crowd. But so it is amazing to me if anybody shows up. I don't know. They must be like masochistic. They must like this. But we'll see how you do after. We'll see how you do after this meeting. We'll see how well you do after this meeting. I'm gonna talk about a few things. Probably maybe we'll do a little bit of the 8th step. There is something I'm gonna read. I'm gonna read some of the material from Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's one of the things I like to quote or I like to talk about, and I think I talked about it at the last meeting, was that line in the first step of the 12 and 12. You know, we have various conference-approved literature in here. There's nothing that's disapproved by the conference, but I guess this is the stuff we publish. And one, of course, is the big book, which is the basic text. It says, because this book has become the basic text of our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recover, there exists strong sentiment against any radical change being made in it. And I think the only real change made in the big book is, I think it was in the foreword to the, let me see, where it is, probably the first edition, where in the first edition, the requirement for membership, it says, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. You know that's not the requirement for membership today. You know the requirement for membership changed after that, right? They dropped the word. In the whole big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they just made one change. They dropped the word. It wasn't a typographical error. They dropped the word. You know what the word was? Honest. They changed it from the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. They changed it to the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Now, personally, I've got to tell you something. I wouldn't have dropped that word. But if you understand why they dropped the word, you're going to understand a lot about, if you understand why they dropped the word, you're going to understand a lot about alcoholism. If you want to stay sober for a long period of time and get this thing, you really want to know about alcoholism. You don't want to be guessing at that deal. You know, life is tough. Has anybody found that life can be tough? It could be a little overwhelming, right? Have you ever tried to manage life, manage people, manage that deal? Remember coming out? How'd that work out for you, right? It's tough, right? It's tough being God and thinking that you're in charge and that you know everything. You know, you sort of like crash and burn and you wind up in rooms like this. With your tail, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Well, you know what would be great? You know what I think alcoholics want? Besides, you know, we want a lot of stuff. It says in the 12 and 12, it says, unless an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism. Is this a closed meeting? Is this a closed meeting? So these are all alcoholics. So they all suffer from alcoholism. So unless an alcoholic, like you, like me, accepts his alcoholism, do you accept your alcoholism? Well, how do you know? Because in order to accept your alcoholism, you'd have to know what you're accepting, right? So some of you think your alcoholism has to do with the fact that you can't drink, right? That's what you think this is about. You think this is about don't drink anonymous. Don't drink anonymous, you know? So you don't drink, so what are you doing here? I mean, if you don't drink, what are you doing here? What are you hanging out at meetings for? I mean, I'm going to give you the solution to your problem. Don't drink. I mean, no, really, you don't have to go to a lot of meetings. You don't have to go to step meetings. You don't have to do anything. Just don't drink. Just go out there and don't drink. Well, I mean, is that too tough? So, you know, I'll tell you, I think there's a possibility that you go to meetings because you think that unless you go to, somebody told you, they give you this bullshit. This is what they said. You came from a treatment center. Did they tell you in order to not drink? Did how many people came from, you don't have to, some of you people come to from a treatment center? Did they give you this crap about you got to go to meetings in order not to drink? Did they say that to you? Has somebody told you that? Don't drink. They say go to meetings. That you have to go to meetings in order not to drink. Well, let me ask you something. What's that shit about? No, think about it. You don't want to drink. You're not drinking. You know you're an alcoholic. You accept your alcoholism. What's this going to meetings shit? I mean, really, that doesn't make any, does it make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me. If the problem is drinking, and all you have to do is not drink, and you don't want to drink, and you know you're not supposed to drink, and you're not going to drink, then what's this meeting shit? What is this, like, just some way of, it's like some sort of Ponzi scheme or something, just some way of getting a few bucks or something? That's what this cop's, I mean, what, I don't understand. So, okay, so maybe this is the deal. Maybe you've come to the conclusion, living with yourself sober. How many people have been living with themselves sober in here? So maybe you've come to the conclusion, living with yourself sober, not really a sophisticated conclusion, but the conclusion that you're crazy. Well, I can see by the laughter, you know what I mean? That's like, that was like nervous laughter, you know what I mean? That wasn't like a yuck yuck, that was like nervous laughter, you know? I can see by that some of you are suspecting there's a possibility there's something wrong with you than just not drinking. That the reason why you have to do a lot of this shit is that I think that there's some of you that really don't trust yourself. You don't trust yourself not to drink. You think that no matter how smart you are and how great you are and how well you're doing, you just don't trust yourself. You think you're that crazy. But like you're one of those guys that think that if you're on the Empire State Building, and you just walk over to the edge to sort of look over, that there's like a 1 in 50 chance you might jump. You might just jump. Just for the hell of it. You know what I mean? You know, that it wouldn't even be you, but somehow you'd find yourself in the air, and in midair you'd say, what the fuck am I doing here? Like somehow you wind up there, falling down, and you didn't want to do it. But now you're going to the ground, you know, a gazillion miles per hour, and you're saying, what the fuck did I do? You see, you're just like, so it's like a scary thing. Well, if you got that deal going for you, well, then you're like me. That's why you go to meetings, because you're an alcoholic and you suffer from alcoholism. Because there's a whole lot of shit you do that you don't want to do. And there's a lot of feelings you have that you don't want to have. There's a lot of thinking you have going that you don't want to have going. There's just a lot of shit that confuses you in your mind. And no matter how well or how great you are, you just come to the conclusion that you have absolutely no control over it. None, zero, forget it, nada. And you don't have a clue as to how to stop it. So it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. You won't find any happiness. I don't know about you, I'm 60 years old, God willing. If I'm healthy, maybe I got another 20, 25 years, 30 years, whatever it is. You guys might have another 40, 50 years. Who knows? If you don't die, I don't really want to go through this thing without any happiness at all, with precarious sobriety. But it says you have to accept your alcoholism and all its consequences, which means you have to understand whatever the hell that means. They got a whole book chock full of all sorts of crap about the consequences of your sobriety, the consequences of your alcoholism. And it says in the big book, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are, in describing us, they say, you're restless, irritable, discontented, unless you can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And you know that's true because you know that's why you drank, because you like the effect produced by alcohol. Because without the alcohol, you were uncomfortable. You were ill at ease. You were anxious. You were worried. And alcohol just did something for you that nothing else could do. Just like, I mean, I defy somebody to drink alcohol and have it do for you what it did for me and then stop. You just ain't going to do it. Alcohol, better than any woman, better than any cigar, better than any amount of money, any suit of clothes, any car, was just a few drinks for me. That's all I needed, just a few drinks. It made me feel on top of the world. So apparently the problem I have is not the drinking. The problem is, you know, the problem is not drinking. It's not even getting drunk. The problem is every once in a while I get sober. You see, really, you guys would have no problem if you could just stay in that continual state of drunkenness. But the problem is every once in a while you wake up and like, you don't need to go to AA to get sober. Listen to me. Trust me. Your kidneys will get you sober. Your liver, until it fails, will get you sober. That's the problem with alcoholism. The problem with alcoholism and alcoholics is that you sober up. If we didn't sober up, everything would be great. We drink ourselves to death and then die. And what's the big deal? But the problem is you wake up in the morning with a splitting headache or feeling crummy up the whole side, and the whole bullshit starts all over again, sober, until you can get your next drink, and usually you have to go to work or some sort of crap like that. And they don't like when you show up drunk. So if you're an alcoholic, the real problem is not alcohol, the real problem is sobriety. You know, alcohol becomes a problem like in the end, you know what I mean? In between, it's like all, it's the sober crap. So now you are sober, what are you going to do? That's the problem. The consequences, well, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic, just one of them, as you go along, you know, the way this thing works is a lot of trial and error. That's the way I found. You walk in here, you don't have a clue. I mean, I'm like clueless. You're clueless about booze. You got people telling you all sorts of shit about booze. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't hang around with this. I thought it was just not drinking. Then I found it's not drinking. It's going to meetings. Then it's not drinking, going to meetings, getting a sponsor. Then it's not drinking, going to meetings, getting a sponsor, working the steps. Then it's not drinking, going to meetings, getting a sponsor, working the steps. Not hanging around at the bar. Not drinking, getting a sponsor, doing steps. Not hanging around at the bar. Not hanging around with those people, hanging around with different people. I mean, there's all these rules and regulations and shit piled. I mean, it's getting like, it's like more and more and more. It's like unbelievable. A lot of crap you got to do just to be almost okay. You know, really. And then as you go along, even while you're doing the crap. Now, this is the bad. This is where it gets real sucky. Even while you're doing it, your life is falling apart. It's not like you're doing this shit and all of a sudden people are handing you $10,000 checks and, you know, everything's okay. You're doing this thing, you got no love life, you got no life at all. People are treating you like shit. Your parents, you know, you got to go to another meeting. Your wife doesn't understand. Your husband doesn't. Like, as a matter of fact, nobody understands. The drunks don't even understand. The only people that understand are at that crummy meeting. And then you go in the meeting, just get the meeting. They want you to do service. I mean, this is like an alcoholic's worst nightmare. This is like not even good. Every once in a while you meet a guy who looks sober. You say, gee, I wish I could be like him. And he's got like 30 years. And, you know, a guy like me with a pot belly looks like his life is over anyway. What's the point? It's unbelievable. It's a bad deal. But here's what happens is by that time, your life is so screwed. You know, there's not much you can do about it anyway. I mean, you know, I mean, because what happens also in Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism, if you stay sober, is as you stay sober, you know, God, Lord has a funny way of handling you. You see, you might be under the opinion that you are like somehow managing your life or doing something with your life or in control of your life. Now, most of us that are in here know that that is so far from the truth, it's unbelievable. But you got no control, you got no say-so, you got nothing, you know what I mean, as to what's going on in this thing. But the bottom line is as you go through this deal, and as you go through your jobs or your sex life or your relationships or whatever the heck you're doing, you know what I mean, you notice that you have problems. You notice, how many people have been sober long enough so that they realize they got problems? Have you ever realized, you know? You guys ever have problems like you think about? You ever have problems that you worry about, that you're anxious about, that you talk to other people about? You have problems, you guys got like problems that don't seem to go away. You know, problems you talk about a lot. But you ever have a problem like you're talking about and it's a real problem and like a month later you're talking about like a similar problem? It's not like you like they go away. They like go in, they come back, and they go away, and they come back, and it sort of like takes a spin off your fastball. It's kind of crummy. And I mean, you ever find that you have a problem or a situation or something you want to change in your life, and you know it's a problem and it's a situation you want to change. You ready for this? It may be a husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, mother, father, money, job, whatever it is. You ever have a problem that you find, you know what the problem is, and you can see the problem, but listen to this. But you can't do anything about it. You ever have that deal? You can't do anything about it. You ever go up to somebody and say, I got this problem, and you tell them the whole story, and they tell you, well, this is what you ought to do about it, and you say something like this, I can't do that. I mean, you ever go back to somebody that you respect, and you say, here's the problem, and here's what you need to do, and they tell you what you got to do, and you know they're right, and you look at them and say, I can't do that. I can't. Now, think about that. Think about that kind of a life. Think about, well, that's going to be a successful life. You go up to somebody and you have a problem, and it's a serious problem, and it's causing a lot of agony. And you go to this person because you respect them, and they tell you what to do, and you know they're right, but you can't do it. And get this, you're sober, and you go into Alcoholics Anonymous. And what kind of craziness is that? Seems to me like this is a very serious disease. You know, this is a serious disease. Calls for drastic action. It's the kind of disease that centers in the mind, not the body. That's why it says alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. Real disease centers in the mind, not the body. It's the way we think. Our thinking produces nothing but toxic waste. Because it's all about us. It's all about what happened to me, what's going to happen to me, what's happening to me now, what's going on with me. You know, that's the way we see life, the way we see traffic. We go through life exactly the way we go through traffic. We get in our car, we see through our windshield. We're not like above the fray or hovering over with a helicopter or anything. We just drive through life, and you know, this is what we see, and this is what we avoid, and this is what is behind us, and this is what's ahead of us. This is what's going to happen. It's all about us. Me, 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 me. You know, and that's all we think about. The wrongdoings of others, fancy to real or imagined. Imaginary shit. You know, we think we can read other people's mind. We're sensitive, you know. I mean, I was talking about somebody in the other meeting, you know. I mean, this has happened to me, but, you know, you just know what other people are thinking. And, of course, you know it's all about you. Anything that happens is about you. You pass somebody in the hall and you say hello, and they don't say hello to you, and say, well, that's son of a bitch. You know, what did I do to him? Oh, yeah, the other day I didn't do it. You get this whole story in your mind about him and this and that. I mean, the poor son of a bitch just found out he had cancer. He wasn't even thinking about you. He's staring straight at you. He's thinking about me. He didn't even say you say hi. You know what I mean? And you've already got him on your list, guys you want to kill. You know what I mean? And you're talking about 16 people, and you're drinking about it in the bar the next day, you know, and all that. I mean, this is alcohol. This is all part of alcoholism. Wanting people to like, God forbid, you know, a million people could love you. One person walks out of the room or doesn't look at your eyes and says, what did I do to that guy? The inability to handle the possibility that somebody may not love you, you know? Everybody's got to love you. I mean, you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, what do you hear people say? My mother doesn't understand. You know, the truth of the matter is when we drink, we didn't give a shit whether anybody understood. All of a sudden we came into Alcoholics Anonymous and everybody has to understand us. And has to understand this immediately. And has to understand every nuance of alcoholism and why we need what we need. It's not enough that we're getting better. They've got to understand why we're getting better and how they got. And not only that, they've got to appreciate it and be grateful for us and applaud us and tell us how wonderful we are. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about a six-year-old child. I'm talking about 30, 40, and 50. You know what I mean? We got to get our gold star, you know, or else we're sucking our thumb. Thumb-sucking crybabies. It's a pretty serious disease. I happen to be one of those guys that think that one of the reasons they dropped the word honest from the only desire, you know, they say, this is what I've been told. I haven't researched this. Somebody will research this, that the reason they dropped the word honest is because it was a stumbling block. It was too tough. It was too tough. You know, Bill Wilson wanted to drop God from Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for Henrietta Seiberly and a lot of other people involved in this program, if it wasn't for Dr. Bob Smith, we'd have a godless program. We wouldn't even be here. This program wouldn't even be around. We'd be in a sorry state of affairs. Bill Wilson, the guy, he was an alcoholic. The guy who said, The guy who Bill D talked about, the man on the bed, who said he was. Here's what he said. He said, page 191. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seem to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across the table at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, this is what Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep on talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling other people about it, has been a sort of golden touch for the AA program and for me. That was Bill Wilson when he first came in, when he first got this thing. And other people were listening to him. And Bill Dodson became like a stalwart in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that sentence that he heard 2 weeks sober changed his life. That's the same Bill Wilson who said a few months later, the same guy, a few months later, who said the following. Page 159. Dr. Bob and good old timer. Here he is, 159. Same Bill Wilson. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. That's the same guy. You know, we have a big book that says, burn the idea into the mind of every alcoholic that he can get, well, job or no job, wife or no job, regardless of anything. Just trust God and clean out. There is one that it all is all about. That same guy, that Bill Wilson, a few months after that was saying, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. Well, that's not so unusual. You think Bill Will was any less alcoholic than you are? Have you ever been to meetings where people say they talk too much about God, or I don't want to hear that stuff about God? I don't want to hear that crap about God. Isn't that the prevalent attitude in most of the meetings you go to? Just don't talk too much about God. Why does it surprise you that Bill Wilson, after he was sober for a few months, didn't want to talk so much about God? I mean, you know why? You know why he didn't want to talk about God? He tells you later on, because other people didn't like it. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It isn't Well People's Anonymous. It's about a group of people that are defiant. The chief characteristic is defiant. They don't give a crap about anybody. They don't come in here believing in God. They don't want to hear that crap about God. If you say anything about God, they're going to be skeptical. They're going to be cynical. They're going to call you names. They're going to laugh at you. How many people like to be laughed at? How many people like to be snickered at and made fun at? How many people like people that don't like that? No, none of you guys. As a matter of fact, when you make your four-step list, I'll bet one of the list of fears, one of them was being humiliated, having people laughing at you. Isn't that what being poor is all about? Being broke is about being anything where people look down on you? You don't like being laughed at. You don't like being, you want to be thought of as being cool, hip, slick, people looking up to you. You don't want people laughing at you saying, oh, he's a Jesus freak. Oh, he believes in God. Oh, he's stupid. You don't like that. You want them to think you're cool. That's your deal. That's in your DNA. You're so cool. You got a lot of money. You're cool. You got a cool car. You know? You're good looking. You're cool. You're hip. You're slick. You know? You're not an idiot. You don't want people talking bad about you. See, people with low self-esteem that have little or no egos, who have fragile egos, who are childish, their entire life, what they think about themselves and how they feel about themselves are based upon what other people think about them. It's a horrible way to go through life. All you're doing is worrying about other people, and they think they're strong and they're really weak. They can't even talk their mind to say what they feel because they have to second-guess themselves all the time. They can't even live their life the way they want to live their life. So they're not even free because every time they do something or make think about anything, they got to take a poll. But they got to say things like, well, what will they think? What will they think down in AA? What will my mother think? What will my father think? What will my sister think? What will all my friends think? And they're anything but cool because they can't even live their own lives. Well, that's what alcoholism is all about. And then even after you do it, no matter how well you do it, you feel so crappy about yourself, you got to drink. In the early, that's why they dropped honesty. They dropped honesty because it was hurting people's feelings. They wanted more people. They didn't want people to get upset because, you know, yeah, that's what happens. An alcoholic with 2 days sobriety walks in here. He's psychotic. He's nuts. And he says, I don't like the God things, and we're turning to each other. I don't like the God thing. We're turning to each other. People who are sober 10, 15 years say, maybe we should change the program. He doesn't like the God thing. Maybe we should figure out who the sickest son of a bitch is in here and find out what he doesn't like. Let's find out. Let's take the guy who is the sickest son of a bitch in here, who is unsuccessful to the extreme, who doesn't pay his child support, whose life has run his life into the ground. Let's ask him what he likes and doesn't like about the program. And then however he wants to change, whatever he likes, let's just change the son of a bitch. And maybe we can all be like him. Because if we don't, he won't like us and say bad things about us and laugh. It would be funny if it wasn't true. So here's Bill Wilson. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. I said to him, well, we're not out to please alcoholics. You see, that's what he was worried about. He was worried about whether the alcoholics liked him. Well, we're not out to please the alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't, you see, Henrietta Seiberling, Bob Smith, who was really the spiritual part of the program, you know, they were not looking at the alcoholics. They were looking someplace else. They were looking where you're supposed to be looking. Not at him, not at her, not at them. They were looking at where you're supposed to be focused, where your focus is supposed to be. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass. You're supposed to be looking at him. You know, see that your relationship with him is right. He's going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. It says, well, we're not out to please the alcoholics. They've been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be the Rotary Club or something like that, because God is your only source of power. Finally, Bill agreed. And so we have a lot of stuff going on. We got a lot of things in here where people are sort of fighting that deal. I'm fighting that deal because we're so deeply embedded in the idea that we can live life by, you know, self-propulsion, which is probably why, and that's the way we are, which is probably why they have this whole line in the third step. Where it talks about the real problem. And the real problem, they say, is selfishness and self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And we don't realize that all we do is think all the time about ourselves and how we feel. And if we ever think about other people, it's always in relationship to us. It's always in the relationship to how, you know, even when we hurt somebody. I mean, God, the last thing we want to think about is somebody doesn't like me. You know, I mean, it just drives us crazy. You know, one of the things I had to learn with the eighth and ninth step is to not say I'm sorry. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being I'm sorry, but I lived the life of I'm sorry. My whole life was, if you're an alcoholic and you're not saying you're sorry, that means you don't know anybody. That's all it means, it's just you don't know anybody. I mean, it's always, I'm sorry I couldn't make it. You know, I'm sorry the check will be, I'll give you the check tomorrow. I'm sorry I'll pay you back next Tuesday. You know, I'm sorry, it's always I'm sorry, but I'm sorry is never really I'm sorry. I'm sorry is, please don't hate me, tell me you love me. So I won't feel bad. Please don't make me feel bad. I know that's what I'm sorry means to an alcoholic. This is the way it works, this is the game I play. I say I'm sorry. And then you have to immediately forgive me and say something like this. Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Okay? So, I'm sorry I blew up your car and raped your wife. He says, don't even worry about it, Russ. No big deal. I love you, buddy. You know what I mean? Because if you don't do that, it's not because I'm not like sorry. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I'm sorry you don't like me and you're mad at me because that'll make me feel bad. You know, and all I give a shit about is me. All I think about is me and how I feel. So I say I'm sorry, so you will give me my booze. Don't worry, everything's okay, and then I don't have to think about it. See, I know that's what I'm sorry means to me, because this is the way it works. I say to Kevin, I'm sorry. And he doesn't, I mean, let's say Kevin doesn't play along. Let's say he does something. You know how, you know, if you hurt me, I'm never forgiving you. You understand that? Well, that's the alcohol code. I never forgive you. Ever. You know? 2,000 years I'm holding a grudge, okay? But here's the deal, the way it works. But if I hurt you, it's automatic, immediate forgiveness. I say, truth is, I shouldn't even have to say I'm sorry. You should forgive me anyway, because I'm God and I have a right to do anything. But you may not realize that, you know? So I say to Kevin, this is how it works. I know how to, because I say, I'm sorry. Okay, I mean, I lower myself and say, look, I'm sorry, buddy. So Kevin, let's say, for whatever means, he misses a beat. He doesn't immediately say, oh, that's okay, Russ. Don't worry about it. Forget it. Can I give you $10? Whatever it is, you know what I mean? So he, like, looks at me like he doesn't forgive me immediately. And then I go like this. What's the problem? I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry. You're supposed to say, you forgive me. What is this crap? You know what I mean? It doesn't matter that your leg is lopped off or that your life is over or your wife is dead. What is that? I said I was sorry. Didn't I say I was sorry? What, are you going to hold a grudge against me? You see, because it's not about Kevin. It's not about him losing his wife. It's not about the legs or anything like that or all that crap. It's about me feeling bad, and I don't want to feel bad, so you got to immediately forgive me. It's all about my happiness. It's all about me. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. We live our lives this way automatically. I mean, I'm talking about this stuff now, and we sort of laugh and giggle, and maybe some of you say, yeah, that's the way it is, that's the way I am. But this isn't like stuff we think about all the time. We don't even realize we're doing this, we're doing it. This is just what we're doing it. Every once in a while, we go to a meeting, we read something, and say, yeah, this is the shit I do, and then we go on doing it without even knowing we're doing it, because it's just the way we do it. I mean, there's a lot of things we do we don't even realize we're doing. I was talking about one of the things we do with the other. You know, look, so I get, you ever get into a fight with something or some sort of problem with somebody or some sort of problem at work? Now, a lot of you guys have done your four-step shenanigans, so what I'm talking about, other guys won't. Where you, some sort of turbulence happens and everything like happens, and as a result of it, you do some things that are wrong. You steal the money. You say something. You do something that's wrong. Okay? But even you get involved in somebody, you do something that's wrong, but they were wrong too. They did something wrong to you. Or somebody does something wrong. In other words, there's enough wrong to go around. There's a bunch of wrong. You're wrong, they're wrong, different things are wrong. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't like pain. Right? I mean, that's not, what's wrong with that? I don't like pain. Is that like a crime? Not like, I don't like pain. I don't like to feel bad. I want to feel good. I'll do anything not to feel bad. Now listen, you know what I found? I found when I think about things that I did wrong, when I think about things I did wrong or how I screwed up, it makes me feel bad. I feel like guilty. I feel bad. You know what I mean? But when I think about the crap you do wrong, it makes me feel good. Or at least it doesn't make me feel bad. It makes me feel sort of powerful. It makes me feel like I've got something on you. It makes me feel like I'm better than you. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, if we're in a fight and I did something real wrong and you did something wrong, even if my wrong was worse than your wrong, if I can focus on your wrong, I can. I don't even have to look at my wrong. I automatically want to think about what you did to me and either excuse my actions or think about you. As a matter of fact, not only do I want to think about you and what you did to me and how horrendous it is to blow it up, I want to gather up an army of people. I think I want to talk. I want to get on the phone and tell about 23 people so I can gather up my army and we can take a vote on you. You know? Now, every once in a while, I'll find some son of a bitch who'll say something, well, what about what you did? And I'll say, well, screw you. You don't understand. And I'll hang up the phone. That guy gets written off the list. But I need to gather up an army of people so we can keep that you thing going. Maybe I'll even go to a meeting and tell the whole group about what you did. You know, what I don't realize is I do this all the time. This is the way I live my life, along with 1,000 other gesticulations of the mind, things I do in my mind, which I don't even realize I'm doing, which has nothing to do with reality and what really happens, just the way I think. I think in such a way so that I'm always thinking through a perspective of my own of my own eyesight, my own prism, so that I will feel good instead of bad. If there's two ways of looking at things, and I mean looking at things which include the way, things that I do that are wrong, and you, I will always look in the way that it will make me feel as innocent as possible, or as good as possible, or rationalize my actions as much as possible. This is just a small part of the way I deal with things in life. So the troubles we think are basically of our own making. The arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-over and riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of the selfishness. I mean, you can stop drinking. How do you stop this stuff? You've been doing this. Hey, if you're 20 years old, you know how long you've been doing this? 20 years. If you're 30 years old, you know how long you've been thinking this way? 30 years. If you're 50 years old, you know how long you've been dealing with life this way? 50 years. What do you think, but the plug in the jug and you go to like one step series and all of a sudden you're well? You don't think this way anymore? You just naturally think this way. You want to think this way. You want to think this way so much that even if you could see it and you don't even see it, the only way it's going to be pointed out to you is if you do these steps or if you hang around with some sponsor that's going to say goofy things to you. And 90% of us, if you get next to anybody who even points out the fact that, you know, maybe they're not wrong. Maybe you ought to look at your own actions. You say, well, why don't you go screw yourself? Who the hell asked you? I mean, your chances of getting this thing right or ever seeing this thing clearly are slim and none. And anybody that ever points it out, you're going to write them off the list because you're not going to want to hear it because it's a bunch of bullshit. Because they're bullshit. And the whole thing's bullshit and it's a bunch of crap because you don't want to change. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. God makes that. There it goes again. So we got to change, and now we got some book, and it's the basic text, and it says God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of getting rid of self without His aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. We were moral, we had all this philosophy, we were smart, but you know what it says? It says, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own. We had to have God's help. There it is. That's the whole reason why this book says in Chapter of the Agnostics, therefore, we're powerless. Problem is that we lack power. Therefore, we've written a book that's spiritual and moral, and therefore, we're going to talk about God. Because God is the only thing that lifts this crap. I mean, the drinking, anybody can stop drinking. I mean, that's the truth. We got a gazillion people in here that stop. Everybody stops drinking. Very few people make it to emotional sobriety. Very few people make it less. 0.5% stay sober more than 20 years. And even some of those over 20 years are having problems. I mean, nobody gets perfect in here. But, you know, I got a book in here that says we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocking into the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. I mean, I have a book in here that says we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we... You understand what they say? They didn't say things are a little bit better. They didn't say we're not drinking and things are okay. They said we've experienced much of heaven. And we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, unless you got that going for yourself, if you're considering you want really what this thing is handing out, unless they're total liars, you might want to consider doing this stuff anyway, whether you believe in God or not. I'll tell you one thing about me. I would do anything to get where I want to go. You know, I was talking, I know we got a lot of guys in here. I remember dressing up on a Saturday night, going out, looking for her. Believe me. I was willing to go to any length to get her. You know, anything. You know, any steps. I would take any steps to get her. I mean, some of them I balked. I thought I could find an easier, softer way, but I could not. I did whatever I had. Well, listen, it's where you want to go. It's what's your drug. If females are your drug, you'll find them in here. If money's your drug, you'll find them out there. If what you want is this stuff, you'll find it in here too. You'll find whatever you're focused on. Where there is no vision, you know, the people perish. It's what you're focused on. There are, you know what the amazing thing is about Alcoholics Anonymous? It amazes me. There are people that'll be thrown by the word honest. There are people that'll be thrown out of here by the word God. I'm serious. I don't think that's a problem. Listen, everybody gets a shot. There's nobody that's stopped from getting, the first sentence in every meeting is, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Isn't that the first sentence? There's not a person in AA that isn't told, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Remember the old axiom that I say? Whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him?
No alcohol. It confuses them. It'll confuse you. If you're told something, you read something you don't like, you'll try to figure out a way around it. You'll try to figure a way to change it, just like Bill Wilson was trying to figure a way to change it. Well, the bottom line is there's not a person in AA that goes to meetings that doesn't hear, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, which means if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. The truth of the matter is what they did has nothing to do with what's going on in AA today. Nothing to do with what's going on today. They wrote this in 1939. In order to understand what they did, you have to understand what was going on in 1939. They didn't have millions of people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous being pumped in through some sort of huge funnel, most of which didn't want to be here. They were dealing with low bottom drunks that had no money, that were dying on the street, that would do anything to stay sober and were desperate. They weren't dealing with people that had a lot of money and a lot of fame and a lot of stuff that were coming out of treatment centers that were forced to come because they had to have papers signed. And I'm not putting you down if you have to have a paper sign. There are people in here that are having paper signs that are obligated to go, but the bottom line is they really want this thing, or they'll come to want this thing, and there are people coming in on their own, they want it, it has something to do. But the point is, they had a small amount of people, and the only people here were low-bottom drunks that really wanted this thing, and the word honesty wasn't going to throw them away, and the word God wasn't going to throw them away. And they weren't scared to talk about it. You got people in here that are here because they're obligated to be here because they got to do a certain number of meetings, or because they don't want to leave the house, or because they have a court date, or because some guy in a black robe ordered them to be here, or because they're just here in order to stop drinking long enough so they can get out there. There's all sorts of reasons to be here. They didn't have the huge amount of people, and that's just a fact of life. So that alcoholism, you know, we're all alcoholics. There's not a person in here who's not an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. So you got to understand, although we have a lot of good traits and there's a lot of good stuff going on here, just remember one thing. All the crap that goes along with being an alcoholic, all the worrying about what people think about you, feeling uncomfortable and gossiping around people's, everything that an alcoholic does or wants to do, every bad trait in the world that we have, every defect of character, is alive and well and pumping real fine in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know something? Here's the scary part. The sickest guy in the room, if he has a little time, he starts opening up his mouth. Everybody around AA is scared to say anything or do anything or what, because everybody wants to blend and be accepted and nobody wants to be thought bad of. And so essentially, AA is made up of a bunch of cowards. And that's okay, because I'm like the chief coward of all of them. That's just the way we are. We're scared to speak our mind. I mean, 90% of people that talk to me are scared. They're just scared. Should I put this on my application? What should I tell my boys? What should I tell my wife? What should I do? It's all about fear. It's all about what people think about them. They're all scared out of their ass about everything else in the world. The world scares the shit out of alcoholics. They're all cowards. Including myself. So how do you get over that shit? How are you going to get over that crap? How are you going to be a successful human being with that crap? When you're always second guessing yourself. You know what I'm talking about. The stuff that keeps you up at night. The stuff that you worry about. The stuff that you think about. So what do? You're a sick, sick, cowardly person. So what do? You just sort of find a sick guy or sick gal to latch onto that's just as sick as you are, so you won't be scared of them. Because you'd be scared to find a well one. You wouldn't know what to do with it. It'd be a scary deal, wouldn't it? Just find somebody as nuts as you are. Well, I'm just trying to see whether we can thin out the crowd a little bit. You know what I mean? Go someplace and make them feel better. Hey, it won't kill you. It's just words. It's just words. You know, it's probably all bullshit anyway. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't let it bother you. So, in any event, I'm going to close up with this because I want to get a little tough with you now. Here. I think you'll like this. So, remember it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So, would you like to know what AA was like in 1939 when they wrote that? Because the only way you'd understand what they were about in AA, to understand, rarely have I seen a person fail, is you'd have to know what their path is. But to know what their path is, you'd have to actually read up as to exactly what they're doing. Then you might want to pick up a book called Dr. Bob and Good Old Timey. See what AA was about in 1939, 1938. What their path was, how they acted, what they talked, how they talked. You know what I mean? Okay, this is page 142. This is Dr. Bob, 12-stepping Clarence Snyder. Okay?
Clarence Knight was called the Brewmaster. He was like the first one who got sober in Cleveland, you know. And you've already heard about, you know, Bill D, you know, the man on the bed. So here's Clarence. Here it says, I'll just read this to you. It'll take about 2 minutes. Clarence S. was one of those who came from Cleveland at the beginning of 1938 to be fixed by Bob. His wife, who later became very close to Ann and Bob and Dr. Bob, had talked to a number of ministers and doctors before her sister, Virginia, in New York, who was a patient of Bill Wilson's brother-in-law, Dr. Leonard V. Strong, told her about Dr. Bob. One of these ministers, incidentally, was Dilworth Lipton, who was later to have a great deal to do with the rapid growth of AA in Cleveland. Now, here we go. This is Clarence Snyder's wife talking at first. And here's it's just one page long. It's on page 142, 143. You can read it. I called Dr. Smith. This is Bob Smith, one of the guys who was sitting there. He was supposed to be the spiritual guy. Bill Wilson was the promoter. Bob Smith was the anchor. He was the spiritual guy. This is the co-founder. This isn't Russell Spatz's opinion about what Alcoholics Anonymous is not like. This is not my opinion as to how you talk to alcoholics. This is not my opinion about... This is written down in our literature. This is Dr. Bob Smith. This is the guy, okay? I called Dr. Smith, and I still remember my words and how gruff his voice was. Dorothy recalled the 1954 conversation with Bill. He scared me to death. I said, is this Dr. Smith who helps drunks? Well, when he said yes, I wept. I mean, she's crying over the phone. She's crying over the phone. Here's Dr. Smith. She's crying. She's got a wife who's crying over the phone. And said that my husband was an alcoholic. Ooh, 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 ooh. He says, right away, he wanted to know how old Clarence was. She cries. She's weeping. 34. Impossible, he replied. He hasn't suffered enough. There's never been anyone that young come into the fellowship and recover. This could be one of Dr. Bob's tactics at the time to suggest that a newcomer wasn't ready because of being too young or being a woman or not having suffered enough. Prospects were thus forced to prove that they were indeed ready and willing to accept the program. You guys don't have to prove anything, do you? You just walk through the door. They don't care. You just come in whether you like it or not, with your cell phones on, your beepers, you listen whether you like it or not, or you talk whether you like it or not. You don't really give a shit. You just come here, it's freebie, who cares? You don't have to prove anything to anybody. It's like we got to take you, right? Back then, you had to prove it to them. They didn't want to waste your time. They didn't want to waste their time. Upon hearing Clarence's age, Dr. Bob very likely thought the first Ernie G, who was also under 35 and had not stayed sober. Dr. Bob was about to hang up on me. He's about to hang up on her. She's crying. Dorothy continued, but then he relented and said that there was one man in Cleveland who might be able to help Clarence. And he gave me Lloyd T's address. I went over to see Lloyd. He talked to me, but they were very secretive in those days. He didn't tell me what the solution was. I did know that it was tied up with the Oxford Group, which was an evangelical Christian movement. The Oxford Group, said Dorothy, who describes herself as being a bitter and skeptical at the time. She was bitter and skeptical about God and religion. That's what they were dealing with. That's what they're dealing with all of us. I decided I would pretend to go along with it if Clarence took to it. In other words, she was going to pretend she was that desperate, even though she hated religion and God and she was bitter, she would go along with it if he would look at it or he would take him in. Here's where it gets good. So she bought her husband a bus ticket to Akron. There, Clarence made arrangements to go to the hospital where he stayed a week. He remembers Paul S. coming in and eating his breakfast, then coming in and eating lunch. I couldn't eat, said Clarence. Doc Smith came later and took over. So Dr. Bob Smith now comes into the room. He sat on the edge of my bed and said, this is Dr. Bob Smith now. You ready? This is Dr. Bob Smith coming into your room, sitting on your bed in your hospital, boys and girls, or right in here. And this is what he says. Well, what do you think about all this? Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. I don't know whether you're ready yet. You're kind of young. I was down to 135 pounds, no job, no clothes, and no money. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them
I was ready. How many people in here had to convince somebody they were ready before they got in here? Not one of you. Then he asked, this is what Bob asked. You think I'm rough? This is what Bob asked. He says, do you believe in God, young fella? How many people went to treatment here? Don't raise your hand. Okay, raise your hand. Look, did they say to you before you went to treatment, do you believe in God? No, they said, do you have any insurance? See, you bananas think money will buy you out of this disease. Listen to me. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter about anything. I don't care. Because you know what? This disease is stronger than anything you got going for you. You're kind of young. It says, then he asked, do you believe in God, young fella? He always called me young fella. When he called me Clarence, I knew I was in trouble. Then he says, this is what Clarence says. This is what you would have said. What does that have to do with it? This is what Dr. Bob says. Everything. Everything. You got guys in AA telling you that God has nothing to do with it, that atheism is okay, that everything's okay, and they get mad at me, and they want to sell their story. Bullshit. Bullshit. That's not AA. That's doing it the way you want to do it because you don't want to change, but you don't want to read this material. Bullshit. Dr. Bob said, everything. It has everything to do with it. Then he says, I guess I do. Alcoholic reply. He's sort of sliding into home. I guess I do. You know, Dr. Bob doesn't let him go. He says, guess nothing. Either you do or you don't. What happened to the second step? Like, whoa. Yes, I do. That's fine, Dr. Bob replied. Now we're getting somewhere. All right, get out of bed and on your knees. Get out of bed and on your knees. We're going to pray. I don't know how to pray. I guess you don't, but that's all right. Just follow what I say, and that will do for now. I did what I was ordered to do, Clarence said. There was no suggestion. Dr. Bob was always positive about his faith. Clarence said, if someone asked him a question, what about the program, his usual response was, what does it say in the good book, the Bible? Suppose he was asked, what's all this first things first? Dr. Bob would be ready with the appropriate quotation, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. What if that was AA today? What if the only way you could get through that door is if I said you had to say you believe in God and you had to get on your knees and say a prayer in front of three or four people? You know what I think? I think the rooms would be packed. Maybe not with all of you. I don't think you'd have a problem getting an AA meeting going. I think you'd have a lot of AA meetings with a lot of people. And they'd be, you know what I think? I think they'd be experiencing much of heaven. They'd be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I think people would be dying to get in to get what they were dishing out in there. I think the AA meetings that you would be going to would be a million times different than the crap you're experiencing now. I think the people you would be associating with would be unbelievably of higher quality than the crap you're listening to right now. I think you would see serious, grown-up, successful people caring about other people, serious about their lives, serious about recovery, and you would be serious too. And I think your life would be 1,000,000% better. And you'd be loving it, and you'd be grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I think. Now, it's just a theory. I could be wrong about that. You know, and some of you may not be here. And a whole bunch of you may be here. And there may be some that wouldn't be here that later on would show up. Now, I don't think it would harm AA at all. But, you know, we have that problem, don't we? We worry about what people think about us. We worry about numbers. We worry that people will laugh at us. So, you know, the doors are open. Anybody can walk in. In AA now, in the year 2009, it's not like AA in 1939. But understand one thing. I mean, I'm sorry. You can read the book. You can read the material. When they wrote Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They said, when you do what we do, if you follow our path, you'll get what we got. They were not talking about experiencing AA the way you are experiencing it today. Do you understand what I just said? The AA they were talking about is what I just read to you. That's the kind of AA they were experiencing it. Now, I'm not saying it was all 100% like that, okay? And we had groups in New York and down here, but it was different. The demographics were different. What they were talking about was different. They were reading the Bible. They weren't snickering at religion. You know, they were involved with the church. They were involved with preachers, Dr. Shoemaker. They were just, they didn't talk down about the Oxford group. It wasn't the deal that's going on right now in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a different deal. So read the material. See what this is. Now, I happen to believe, you know, I mean, I don't want this to sound unhopeful. I happen to believe that the people, it's a self-cleaning oven. You know, every 2 years the bullshit burns off. I happen to believe that the people that want to stay sober and that want to get this thing, we'll stay sober, we'll get this thing, and we'll start working this thing much the same way they were working it. With the same fervor, you know, the same enthusiasm, the same deal. But I am very, very clear about the fact that right now, in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship to a great extent works against the program. The fellowship and what you hear out there to a great extent in meetings works against, not for the program, and waters it down. So thank you very much.